This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Super Saver wins the Derby for Top Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Welcome to the show trainers listen to. It is Trainer Talk presented by Basic Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, once again broadcasting from our Lexington, Kentucky studios and welcoming all of you joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220, XM Channel 206, and everyone tuning in worldwide with our live streaming on your computer, on your smartphone, or on your tablet at horseracingradio.net. You know, if there's one thing that we've learned from talking to various trainers on this program over the past couple of years, it's that they can't do it alone. They can't be successful without the help of good assistants, grooms, and exercise riders. It really does take a whole team working together to be successful in the profession of training racehorses. And I have the privilege on this program today of being joined by one of the best assistant trainers in the business. He is trainer Jimmy Barnes, and the 55-year-old has worked with Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert for 16 years, and probably no year has been more memorable than the first half of 2015. Jimmy, welcome to the program. Happy to have you on board.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, first of all, congratulations on this amazing Triple Crown run. We're just about 2 weeks removed from that Triple Crown, the first in 37 years. Have you even had the chance to really wrap your arms around what you and the team have accomplished?
Well, absolutely. You know, we came back to Churchill, and the fans just overwhelmed us there. They were just came out in droves. It was just been amazing, the fan support we've had with this horse. And, you know, every day you do think about it. And, you know, I'm trying to think of moving back to California now. We're packing. I've got to get my mind on the two-year-old and start looking for our next Kentucky Derby horse next year.
Isn't that the great part about this game? It doesn't stop, right? It's kind of just a cycle that continues on.
No, yeah, you know, I like to, I'd like to just stop and this would be it. But oh no, we have to move on. You know, we're already preparing for next year right now. So, you know, it's just been great. You know, it's a thrill, something you'll remember the rest of my life, just to cherish. And you know, just wonderful.
How much time have you been able to spend reflecting maybe on your life and where you started and now where everything ends up with this unbelievable accomplishment?
Well, you know, I do spend time. I've done that for quite some time because up until this point, I thought I'd been done quite a bit and had a lot of accomplishments, but this is just over the top, this accomplishment. And, you know, I always knew once I started working for Bob, I knew we had a chance. We were going to do it. If anyone was going to do it, we could do it. We have the caliber of horse to do it. And, you know, we've been close. The 1 year I was just very disappointed with Point Given because I really thought that was the horse that could have done it. And we couldn't win the Derby. And the Derby's, to my opinion, the toughest race of the three to win. It's so hard just to get there and survive the races just to get up to it. And then to, you know, get through the 20-horse field. And but, you know, once we won the Derby, hell, the Preakness, for some reason, the Derby, if you run good in the Derby, you run good in the Preakness usually. And, you know, Belmont's tough also, but that Derby to me is the toughest one of all. A lot of people will say, well, was it stressful? It's not really stressful. The Derby's probably more stressful than anything just because it's so large. You have to deal with a large crowd, large field. It's a big walkover. The paddock's insane. It's just a lot for your horse to have to comprehend.
Put this Triple Crown in perspective for me then, Jimmy. Where does it rank among all-time sporting feats?
Well, I mean, you know, I would have to think it's right up near the top. It's hard to compare, you know, the horses with athletes, you know, as far as Super Bowls and World Series, but it's something that's tough to do, and you know, a lot of people said it might not be done again.
Yeah, it's certainly one of those accomplishments in the world of sport that really doesn't take a backseat to any other sport when you look at their milestone performances, whether it be the Triple Crown in Major League Baseball or accomplishments that we see in the NBA with averaging a triple-double for a full season. That's only been done one time. The horse racing Triple Crown is certainly right up there. Take me back to about 7 p.m. on the first Saturday in June and tell me about what was happening in the moments before the race, and then take me through watching him in that mile-and-a-half journey.
Well, you know, the main thing was just you want to get through the paddock. You want your horse comfortable. From what I could see, it's a short walk over there, which was nice. He went through the paddock, saddled very easily, was very good. This horse really cooperates. He makes it easy on himself. Watching him, you know, I'd keep an eye on him at all times. Watching him in the post parade, he was handling the post parade great. He looked awesome. He had a bounce to his step and looked good. Really, it was about mainly getting my family together, finding a spot to watch the race, because I can't be too far away in case, you know, I'm needed for something. So I try to stay close to the rail up front. We get a spot usually like right behind the winner's circle. I know going to the gate, the main thing, we got to get out of the gate. You got to break. You don't want to have to overcome anything. You don't want to have to, you know, get behind the eight ball immediately and just have to overcome something. So the break was most important. Once he broke and got to the lead, you know, and they were clicking off fractions that's his like work pace when he works. He works faster than he was running. And nobody was pushing him. I knew we were in pretty good shape. But it is, it's a mile and a half. The distance really didn't concern me too much. I think what makes this horse a little special is he's got a high cruising speed. He really cruises, and he'll keep going. You know, he doesn't stop. If you go with him early, you're going to run fast, and he'll wear you out. And if you try to catch him, he doesn't stop, so you're going to wear yourself out trying to catch him. But watching the race, you know, when the fractions are going, I'm enjoying it. I know we're pretty comfortable. His ears are pricked and everything. So turning for home, I said, well, we got this now. You know, it's in the bag. So I stood back, and I watched my family. I had my two daughters with me and my wife. And, watching them root for the horse really was enjoyment for me, because my children, they don't get to go to all the races. They've been, you know, to quite a few, but this will be their first for the Triple Crown race. And, just watching them root for this horse was really enjoyment for me.
Who was more emotional, you or the kids, or Dana?
Dana probably was. I think Dana was. Yeah, I looked over at her and George Alvarez, our exercise rider. They started crying about the 16th full. And, I held everything in pretty good. I was, I'm emotional, but, I just wanted to get out on the track and receive him and just greet him when he came back.
When did it?
That was something else. That was spectacular. There were so many people there that day.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. And the roar just went on and on for a good 10 to 15 minutes.
The winner's circle was insane. The whole thing was so over the top. And it was just, it's a feeling, I'll never forget. And I can bring it back in any moment, in my, just sitting here thinking about it, reflecting on it.
When did all that emotion finally hit you?
Then and later, just whenever I think about it, I can get a little emotional about it. But, we come back to work, and we have other horses to run, and you have to just kind of move on. And I always keep it with me, and it's hard to forget it because you got so many people coming. I'll bring people into the barn, and they start crying just looking at the horse. It's amazing.
How much sleep did you get that night?
So many people's day. Seattle Slews rider here was here the other day, Gene Perget, and I let him get up on the horse and walk around the barn, and I almost made him cry.
You let him get up on American Pharoah?
Absolutely.
How do you like that?
I put him up in the barn. He walked around the shed three times, and then we took him out front, took some pictures with him on him, and then he hopped off, and I put our regular exercise on, went and galloped him, and came back. I let him lead him back off the racetrack, back into the barn. I made his day. He was happy.
How much sleep did you get that night after the race?
Well, not a whole lot, because the worst part of it, we were leaving the next morning, so they picked up tack at 6 a.m. and picked up the horses at 7:30. So I didn't have a whole lot of time to, you know, we were out till 1 or 2 in the morning. But we get some rest after that once we move, we get back to Churchill.
You know, Bob mentioned a couple of times throughout the week and then right after the race that one of the reasons he was so emotional was because he was reflecting back on his parents that had passed away. They were always there by his side and always cheering for him. You kind of had that same moment looking back on your dad, Laverne, who passed away, what, 15 years ago?
You know, growing up as a child, I'd always worked for his trainer. During the summer, I'd travel the fair circuit and you know, from 8 years old on, I was, you know, they're cleaning stalls or walking hot, started galloping at 13. You know, we were always, you know, he trained horses early when I was really young. So it goes back a long ways to the early 60s, even into the late 50s. Those memories come back. And I know, I told her, you know, I'm not going to be, this was back in, I think it was after we won the Arkansas Derby. I told her, I'm not going to be able to, you know, I'll call you as much as I can, but you're probably not going to hear from me too much because I'm on a mission. I'm going to win the Triple Crown this year. She said, well, okay, just try to win the Derby first. So, you know, I knew early on we had a special horse. What made it so easy for me was the horse made it easy, you know. The reason why it was so easy, you know, this horse had some time off after, if he never ran in there, didn't get to run in the Breeders' Cup. We had the little injury come up, so we needed 60 days off. And once he got his 60 days, then it was trying to start to train him. So we had to, you know, we're looking, where are we going to start? Okay, well, we'll start in the Rebel. Well, we only have from, you know, like, we only had like 2 months to get him ready, in which he really cooperated with that. He was, you know, straightforward. There was no setback. You know, we just marched right ahead and ran him in the Rebel. He just ran off the chart that day. He just, you know, it's pouring down rain, slop. But once we got started there, we had a fresh horse. He ran again back in the Arkansas Derby. Really didn't take much out of him there. The race that really, I think, got him ready for the rest of the series was the Derby. You know, a lot of people were kind of disappointed. They thought he should have ran off the screen. But, you know, looking back, the best horses in the whole series basically were Firing Line and Dortmund. They were probably the California horses were the toughest horses this year. And, you know, he hadn't really gone to the bottom of himself in the early races. That race really got him ready when he beat Firing Line and Dortmund that day here. And then it was a matter of just keeping him happy and fresh and getting up to Baltimore. And the rains came down and he got another easy race and over that fast track. And then we had 3 weeks to prepare for the Belmont. And that was, you know, he came out of the Preakness so well that it was very easy for me. I never had the day where I had to, you know, I never had to miss training. There was no complications. So he made it very easy for me. And I think that's really what it takes to win this. Everything, it's all about timing. Timing is everything.
Talking with Jimmy Barnes, longtime assistant to Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jimmy, you just mentioned the rains coming down before that Preakness Stakes. And, of course, we were there providing the coverage on the network, and it was an absolute monsoon. And they kept all the horses out there on the turf course as you were saddling. I can only imagine what that was like. What was that like for you?
NBC, it's all about their timing. And, you know, we were the 1 and 2, so I'm with the woman from ABC. I'm with the paddock judge who gives the riders a leg up. And I kept telling the woman, hey, we got to go. It's going to rain. It's coming now. It's coming. And she said, no, we got to wait. And I said, hey, we better go. And she said, no. And then a few seconds later, it started raining pretty hard. And then they gave us the go ahead to the leg up. And that was, by the time we got them on the track, it was a monsoon. The wind was blowing and everybody was scattering. Well, now I couldn't make it back across to the grandstand, so I'm looking for a place to watch the race from. And it's raining hard, as you well know. So I saw an open door in the back of the tote board. So at this point, I'm just looking for cover because it was raining. The wind was blowing so hard. So it probably wasn't the smartest thing to do to jump in the tote board with all the electrical wires and everything. But, I was just standing there, and I'm thinking, oh, this is great. We're going to win the Preakness, and they're not going to find me. I'm going to get electrocuted. They'll find me 3 days later in the tote board. But I spotted another open tour, and that's with NBC's office or little headquarters where they had a television monitor, and I dashed up into there and watched the race from there. But it was something else.
Yeah, it was something else. It was like nothing I've ever seen, and obviously it worked out for the best, and everything in all three races worked out perfectly, and here we are looking at the first Triple Crown winner.
It's all the timing, just everything. You know, it was weird training this horse here at Churchill. It would rain and rain and rain, and whenever we go out, it would stop raining. Bob came, he goes, "Oh, I'm worried about working." And I said, "It's all right, he likes the off-track, so don't worry about that." He goes, "But boy, it's raining hard." And just as it's 8:30 would come and it was time to go breeze him, just the rain stopped. We got our 10 minutes, worked him, got back to the barn. Here came the rain again. So for some reason, everything absolutely just worked out perfect.
We mentioned your wife,
which
Dana.
Which it usually doesn't. Usually you get something at some point in time with horses. Something goes wrong and you have to come up with another plan or something. But as long as I handled all the small technicalities, you know, making sure I got him to the paddock, making sure he was good in the gate. You know, that's a big deal in our program is a gate, because that's, in our program, that's probably one of the most important parts. If we don't come from, you know, our horses break and they go, you got to pass us to beat us. And, you know, if you get behind your right at the start, it's kind of, you know, you might get trapped, you get blocked. You know, a lot of horses don't like to run in traffic or with dirt. And we never had to overcome anything like that. Not that he couldn't have done it. But because he did track in the Arkansas Derby, he sat off the pace a little bit.
Yeah, well, a big part of that program is your wife, Dana, who is a longtime exercise rider for Bob. And she actually started a couple of years before you, didn't she?
Actually, she did, yeah. She was with Silver Charm and Real Quiet. And, you know, she's been on so many multiple Eclipse-winning horses, Champion, you know, Point Given, Officer, Chaluki, Plum Prix, just so many, 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 many good horses. It's hard, you know, to reflect on all that. You know, I sit in my office sometimes and just look at our tote board, or my office wall, and just reflect back on, you know, just all the Champion horses we've had. And there's just been so many. And that's why I always knew deep down inside that we could do it, you know. If anyone can win this Triple Crown, it would be us.
You know, Jimmy, a lot of people couldn't work with their spouse, whether it be the wife working with the husband or the husband working with the wife, but you and Dana have been able to make it work for a very long time. How do you make it go? How is that so successful?
Well, you know, I know we've always worked together from early years, from, you know, 1985, going back as far as Skywalker. Working with Michael Whittingham. That's where I first originally met her, when he ran, and he actually ran in the Derby. I met him when he was campaigning as a 2-year-old in San Francisco at Bay Meadows. And that's where we first met. And she stayed up in Northern California for a while, and she said, I'm going to go back. I got to go. Mike's pulling the horse out. We're going back to Santa Anita. And I said, well, if you're going, I'm going. So I went to Santa Anita, not having really knowing who I was going to work for or what I was going to do. And I got there, and 5 days after I got there, his assistant quit. And I stepped right into his spot. And I was always a galloping assistant. So it was, you know, it's a way for, you know, a trainer to get a lot of work out of one person. And that particular year, we had Skywalker and ended up winning the Breeders' Cup Classic at Santa Anita with Lafitte Pink Eye. And then after that, I went on to work for his father, and Dana moved on with me every time I moved.
Wow!
Until we kind of went our kind of different ways when she got the job with Bob in the late 90s there.
Right.
And you know, she told me, "Hey, there's a position that's going to open up in Bob's barn." And I said, "Well," I went over and talked to Bob, and he said, "You know what? If this person leaves, you got the job." And sure enough, 7 days later, he left, and I moved over, and then. At that particular time, Owen Hardy was Bob's main assistant. And Bob was going to send Dana and I, and it was 1999, he was going to send Dana and I to Gulfstream for the Breeders' Cup. And Owen said, you know, Bob, I've been here a long time. You know, I think I should go. Maybe, you know, and I didn't mind staying at Santa Anita. That was fine with me. I just started. So he went to Gulfstream for the Breeders' Cup and ended up having a meeting with Godolphin and took a position with them training. And then once that happened, Bob said, well, you can go ahead and take his spot, and I've never left.
Wow. Tell me a little bit about that relationship that you and Dana have with Bob and his wife, Jill. It's a special relationship, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we're all like a family. He's like a brother to me, and she's very kind, and she helps us out in any way that we need any help at all, and we help each other out, you know. We're just like a big family, and you know, we all get along so well, and Bob takes care of me very well, so I don't even really, you know, there's no reason for me to even think about going anywhere. And I've trained on my own. I know how it is. It's difficult. You know, if you don't have the right people behind you, you know, it's very tough and frustrating. So I really enjoy training this caliber of horse, you know, so I really have no plans to go anywhere.
Yeah, Jill said that you're the first person Bob talks with in the morning and the last person he talks with before he goes to bed. Is that true?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I text him early in the morning and call him a little after that, and we'll talk two or three times during the day. And because he's been gone most of the time. I've been here with the horses here in Churchill now since April 12th, I think, when we moved over from Arkansas. And Bob just, he came in and out. And but we have a good enough relationship. He trusts me. He and all our owners are very comfortable with me. You know, he knows I'm going to always do the right thing. And, you know, he understands things happen. And sometimes it's a little out of our control. But you just got to be honest with him. If I have any problems, I call him immediately. And don't hide anything from him. If something happens, it happens. It's just the way it is in this business. And he respects me for that. And he could even tell if I haven't told him something and I have something on my mind. He knows just by my tone of voice that something's up. But I always try to be straight up and never lie, tell him everything that's going on. And he can read a lot just by what I tell him. And he'll say, okay, well, maybe we need to do something different. We'll go a little lighter today. Or, you know, he's very good at that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what the key is to having that successful assistant trainer, head trainer relationship. Is it communication?
Just mainly communications, yes. Absolutely, and trust.
Yeah.
And he knows I have, you know, I've been taught to do, this is the way we train, and he knows I'll get it done for him, and I'll do my best. I'll give him 150% every time.
Bob Baffert is known as being very quick-witted, have a great sense of humor. How would Jimmy Barnes describe Bob Baffert now that you know him so well?
Oh, he's definitely a very, got a good, quick wit about him, and we have a good time. You know, we joke around a lot. We really have a good time, and it's all about, you know, it wouldn't be fun. You know, we're here long hours, and you put in a lot of days, so you really want to be happy. You don't want to be, you know, you don't want to go somewhere where you're not, you know, you're not enjoying it. And he's always made it joyful for me to be here, and gives me a lot of credit and a lot of respect.
How do you think he'd describe you, Jimmy?
Oh, he said I'm a workaholic, probably. He's constantly telling me to go take a day off or take an afternoon off or you know, but I do here and there, but I enjoy, this is a vacation for me, this type of lifestyle. I really know nothing else as far as, you know, other kind of work. That's all I've ever done. So I really enjoy it. And my family, they know. And we're spending more time together, the family. They go on maybe a few more vacations than I do, but I get to go on a few, and they understand.
Well, I think that's the thing about training horses. There are no days off. There's no holidays. You're at the barn, you know, every single day of the year, taking care of the animals. How does that work when you're trying to raise a family?
Well, it worked out very well for us because, actually, even with my wife working, we only needed someone to watch the children, you know, early in the morning and getting them ready for school. So my wife was always there for them in the afternoon, which is difficult because a lot of families don't have that. You know, their children are in some type of daycare late in the year. Their parents may be working till late hours at night and not have the supervision that they need. And, you know, just finding the right person to come to the house, and it was pretty easy. You know, they we go to work at early hours, so it's a matter of just getting them up and dressed and off to school, and then they'd be done. So, and then my wife would take over after that.
Yeah, I read somewhere that Dana said it's nice to have two TVs in the hotel rooms because she can only watch so much American Pickers and Pawn Stars. Are those your two shows?
She watches the General Hospital and The Voice and all her shows. So, yeah, that is tough being on the road, you know, together in a hotel room. So we were fortunate to get a suite-type room, and so that was nice.
How about your personalities? How does that work? Are you and Dana kind of completely different, or are you kind of the same?
She's probably a little kinder than I am. I've been better lately, but she's very sweet and very understanding. I might be a little more rough or stern than her, but at the end of the day, it all works out, and we all get along well.
You said Bob would probably call you a workaholic. Are you a workaholic?
Well, you know, it's a funny business with the horses because, you know, you have to be there with them to take care of them every day. They're not, you know, you don't just turn them off and leave. So, probably am to a extent.
Talking with trainer Jimmy Barnes, he has been a longtime assistant for Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert. And as you can hear in the first half of the show, it is a great relationship. It works, and they are having unprecedented success in the sport of thoroughbred racing. Jimmy, stay with me. We're going to step away for a short commercial break, and then we'll come back and continue this visit on the second half of Trainer Talk. And it's all presented by Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Attention, calling all racehorses. Nominations are now open for the 2015 Fasig Tipton Selected Summer Horses of Racing Age Sale to be held immediately following the July Selected Yearling Sale on July 9th in Lexington, Kentucky. It's the hottest sale of the summer, boasting a $77,000 average and a sale topper of $1,075,000 in 2014. The sale attracts major buyers who are there for one purpose, to buy. 128 horses were offered at last year's sale, a whopping 109 horses sold to 78 unique buyers, with 20 horses topping the $100,000 mark. Go online to nominate your horse today at HORANominations2015.com. That's HORANominations2015.com. The Fasig Tipton Selected Summer Horses of Racing Age Sale and the July Selected Yearling Sale. July 9th at the Fasig Tipton Sale Pavilion on Newtown Pike in Lexington, Kentucky.
And they're off to New York, the premier state-bred program in the United States. When you own a New York bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York breds, get with the program. The best program.
On Saturday, June 20th, watch and wager on the $1 million Pepsi North America Cup live from Mohawk Racetrack. This year will mark the 32nd running of the race for three-year-old pacers, and Mohawk will guarantee a special all-stakes pick four at $100,000 and a 20-cent bet minimum on all triactor, superfecta, pick three, and pick four pools that night. And be sure to try your luck on the all-new 20-cent standardbred jackpot pick six bet. For more information, visit MohawkRacetrack.com.
Now horse players can get an early edge on Saturday's most anticipated races. Daily Racing Form introduces the Saturday Stakes Preview, a new weekly publication that previews past performances for all Saturday stakes from tracks around the country. For the first time, get past performances for all the races you're looking for in one convenient product. Each issue includes the past performances of horses entered in all major stakes for the coming Saturday, plus additional data, stories, and free access to DRF+, all for just $6. $1,000. It's everything you need to jumpstart your handicapping a full day sooner. So look for the Saturday Stakes Preview Print Edition at all Daily Racing Form retailers each Thursday, or get it online at drf.com on Wednesday evenings. Don't start your Saturday handicapping without the Saturday Stakes Preview. Try it this week. The Saturday Stakes Preview at retailers each Thursday. For more info, go to drf.com.
Attention horsemen, Kentucky Downs is proud to announce a record $7.5 million in purses and KTDF money offered at the 2015 race meeting beginning September 5th. Overnight races will offer $120,000 purses for maiden special weight and as much as $130,000 for allowance races, plus three new stakes races and the meet's signature Grade 3 Kentucky Turf Cup offering a $600,000 purse on September 12th. Visit KentuckyDowns.com to download your 2015 condition book today.
Want to know what we're up to?
Yeah.
Then log on to horseracingradio.net.
It appears that the website has become alive.
Horseracingradio.net is your official home for HRRN on the web. Read our blogs, download our podcasts, link up to our Twitter and Facebook pages, listen to live streaming of all of our broadcasts, and much more. HRRN is your home for racing's biggest events, and our home on the web is horseracingradio.net. That's horseracingradio.net.
Join HRRN for Saturdays at Saratoga. Beginning with the opening Saturday of the Saratoga meet on July 25th, we'll broadcast live from the Spa with exclusive coverage of the world's most prestigious races, including the Whitney, the Alabama, the Jim Dandy, and the Travers. Saturdays at Saratoga, only here on HRRN. See a complete schedule or listen online at horseracingradio.net.
This is Al Stahl, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
I'm with Jimmy Barnes here. We met after the Derby and after the Preakness. What's this one feel like?
Well, you know, it felt so good. My whole family was here, and it was just so emotional. You know,
Jimmy's just getting hugs and ovations from his crowd. Describe the road with Bob Baffert over the years, all these times here.
The journey came to an end, and we did it. That's all I know. It's a tough thing to do, and we had a super horse, and that's what it takes to do it. It's really a champion, and he is a champion.
Trainer Jimmy Barnes with our Sean Clancy on the Horse Racing Radio Network. That was following that Triple Crown win by American Pharoah back on the first Saturday in June, and an emotional moment for Jimmy. He continues this visit with me here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, and want to welcome everybody back tuning in on Sirius 220, XM 206, and listening to us worldwide on our website or podcast on our website at horseracingradio.net. And Jimmy, that moment when Sean caught you was almost immediately after the race. And you talked about this in the first half of the program, that having your family there, your two daughters, your wife, Dana, it just meant the world to you.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, because the children, they know that, you know, we worked very hard and probably had to sacrifice, you know, a lot of some family vacations and whatnot. But it all paid off that day.
Did your daughters ever want to get into training horses?
Actually, my one daughter, youngest daughter, she rode jumpers for a while, and then kind of just got out of that, which was fine. And my other daughter, she just graduated. My older daughter, Janae, she just graduated law school last year at Tulane, and took the bar in California and passed this year.
Nice.
So she's in Los Angeles working in a law firm right now.
You know, most trainers that I have on this program, when I ask them if they would want their kids to be trainers, they say, absolutely not. Let them go to school.
No.
Let them go to school. Now, she passed the bar, so you have to be absolutely.
No, it's a different life. You know, I started at a very young age on the racetrack, and I pretty much knew the direction I was going. I graduated high school, but that was it. I was born to be on the racetrack. And like I said, I started at a very young age, which you can't really do that now. Back in the day, there was no outriders or insurance problems or anything like that. So I was able to, I worked with my father's trainer, and he taught me how to ride at a very young age. And it was always a way for you know, I was the only kid in school that ever had money. I was the first one to have a car. I was getting paid $3 a horse to gallop, and I was able to make a decent living still being in, you know, junior high and high school.
Yeah, tell me about being around your dad and his operation as a young kid like that and just kind of hanging out and learning. What was that like?
Well, it was always enjoy. It was always fun, you know, being able to go to the racetrack every day and, always loved getting up early and going to the track and being with the horses and being able to travel during the summer on my own at a very young age. And not many kids get to do that. My parents trusted me, which they probably shouldn't have, because I'm sure I got in way too much trouble. But, I grew up and learned a lot and, and always took care of myself and always made sure I was in the right position to get another job and to move along forward in life.
All right. So you just said that you wouldn't really want your kids to follow in your footsteps and train horses, but how about your dad? Did he want you?
Nowadays, I mean, you need to be educated and to really get a decent, and then it's even tough to get a job. I feel sorry for the young kids now because so many kids can't find a job, and it is, it's very difficult out there. And both my daughters are working. My one's the youngest daughter, George. She works at Santa Anita in the marketing department, and she really enjoys that. And, so I get to see her on a daily basis at the racetrack during when we're racing horses, and I enjoy that. And, it's just nice. So she is somewhat in the racing industry, I should say.
Did your dad always want you to be involved?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
He never encouraged you to do anything else. He said, this is it. Let's do it.
He let me do. I worked some construction here and there on and off, but he knew, I really enjoyed the horses.
How about his training?
He enjoyed showing off to his friends.
Yeah, how about his training methodology? Compare it to what you're doing now with Bob Baffert.
Oh, he just trained one or two on his own and always had a real job on the side. So it was never nothing compared to anything that we do. We're talking early 60s, early and cheap claiming horses. So really, other than just the care, taking care of the horses is the only thing to be similar.
So do you miss galloping horses now?
No. I ride out on the pony every day. If someone said, hey, you have to get on a horse, I did 2 years ago. I thought I could get on a horse. No problem. I stay pretty fit. It's too much. It's a bit much. It's a lot of work. I can see a lot more from being on the pony. I can, I got to teach the babies. We go to the gate. We do a lot of gate work. So I'll have just constant teams coming up to the gate, teaching them the gate. And, just giving instructions to other people. That's my duties now.
People see where Jimmy Barnes is now with his career, but they don't realize all of the different obstacles that you had to overcome along the way to get to this point, just like every trainer that's successful, Jimmy. So after you left your dad, you kind of go out on your own doing some things. Tell me about those early days and what that was like and maybe some of those things that you had to overcome.
Well, the early days are tough because you have, four or five horses and, things go wrong. You get one, get claimed, a couple go to the farm, you're doing all the work yourself. You're riding, grooming, you're just doing everything yourself. And it's just, and you're young. I'm 18 years old. Who wants to trust an 18-year-old kid with their training their horse? So then what I did then was I went to work as an assistant trainer. So I was a galloping assistant. And that was actually with I worked for a gentleman called Alan Severson, who was, I don't know if you're familiar with it, Johnny Carson, The Tonight Show.
Sure.
Doc Severson's son, who trained horses in Northern California.
Okay.
And he had a large string of horses. We had horses for Golden Eagle, for John Gosden. They would ship their horses from Santa Anita. So that's kind of where I first started being an assistant. I was still pretty young. I was probably early 21, maybe, mm-hmm. 22. And then that's when I met my wife at Bay Meadows then. So then once I moved from Bay Meadows to Santa Anita, I just happened to hit that one spot working for Michael Whittingham. And then I stayed with him for probably 4 years. And then he was going to move to Chicago. And his father said, well, you know what? I need someone to take over my second string. So I stepped right into that position. And then from there, working for Charlie was great. He was just quick-witted himself, and it was his later years. But we had some good horses, and I really learned a lot there. And then once it got time where he was really winding down in his career, we had two, three assistants, and I found a job. I could work for Jerry Hollendorfer for the summer. He was going to start sending horses to Southern California. So I said, you know what, I'll go have an interview with him. And he picked me up, and I had a string of horses with him for the next 3 months at Hollywood and Del Mar and Santa Anita. And then after that, I was kind of, I wanted to move on from there. And a good friend of mine, David Hoffman, offered me a job. And at that particular time, we had Gossam again, Touch Gold, Golden Missile. You know, we had some really good horses. He was training for Frank Stronach. And so I stayed with him for a couple of years. And then that's when my wife was working for Bob at the time. And she'd say, you know what, if you want to, and we were always stable at Hollywood Park. And I kind of wanted to be on the other side of town at Santa Anita. And that's when the position with Bob opened up after that. And I just kind of moved over there.
Well, you mentioned some very prominent names on the trainer side of thing there, Jimmy. And you also mentioned some prominent names with horses.
I've always been very lucky to just kind of, hit the right spot at the right time and move right along. You know, who could say they've worked for three Hall of Fame trainers and, just with the horses that I could name off were just incredible. So, that's what I really have the experience and with dealing with this caliber of horse in these kind of races, because it's important going into these kind of big races. You know, you want to keep a cool head and know what to do and how to handle it, what you're going to be up against and what to expect, because it is just a bit different than your average racing, because you're dealing with just such a high profile deal.
Yeah, you mentioned working for three Hall of Fame trainers. What's the one common thread that each of those trainers possesses?
One common thread. They have the capability of getting good horses. They all have a good eye for a good horse. You know, that's what Bob's spectacular as far as picking out a horse. He can find a young horse, like no other, like a yearling. You know, to look at one and say that's the one we want right there. You know, a 2-year-old in training sales. That's what the real good trainers have, the knowledge of getting horses. You have to stock the pond. That's so important. You know, Bob always says, I stock the pond, and Bob stocks the pond, and I train the horses. And that's, without the horses, you really are, up against a wall. You need the horses. You need the horse flesh.
How long does it take you to realize that a horse is the caliber that you're looking for when you get him into your barn?
Well, they'll show talent early on, in the morning, and we have a pretty good idea. We look, watch how they move and what's going, what we can put them with other horses, see where they're at with them. And once they go to the gate, I have a pretty good idea. If you can work out of the gate, a 2-year-old will work out of the gate pretty handily in 59, 59 change, something like that. You got a pretty good one, but you never know until you lead them over, because it could all change in the afternoon. And that's like with American Pharoah. His first start was we knew he could run. He showed a lot. He just didn't handle the paddock. He didn't handle the post braid. He didn't handle much of anything the first time we ran him. So once we got through that first race, we sat down and said, okay, look, I'm going to school this horse every day. I'm going to go with him with a pony every day. We're going to put some earplugs in him to, just deaden the noise. It seemed like noises were bothering him. But a lot of small things, and we handled all that and let him over for a grade one, and he won. And never looked back after that. I don't think he's been beaten.
Yeah, it's amazing to hear that, because you see him now, and he doesn't turn a hair. I mean, you brought him out at Churchill Downs.
No, he's really overcome a lot from his first. I mean, his first start was just insane. We gave him to the pony, and he went running off, got loose, went running down the stretch, turned back around, went running the other direction. It was just a disaster. And, we really, for the next 3 weeks, we worked with him just every day, constantly handling him with the pony, constantly going to the paddock, just trying to just do our best to get him more in a more comfortable position over there, to where he could go to the, taking the blinkers off, that helped a lot, and deadening the noise, putting the earplugs in, that helped a lot. And then he got a lot of confidence in himself, and he took it from there.
Yeah, I can imagine you probably weren't thinking Triple Crown right after that, were you?
Well, I wasn't thinking that particular time. I said we got a lot of work ahead of us. Absolutely.
Talking with Jimmy Barnes, longtime assistant for Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert. Jimmy, what's it like for you being the guy behind the scenes?
Oh, I love to be the guy. I want the challenge. I love the competitiveness. I love it. I love the attention. I love it all.
How about the day that Bob was inducted into the Hall of Fame? Considering the relationship that you have with him, what was that day like for Jimmy Barnes?
Oh, that was emotional. You know, he brought my name up a couple of times in his speech, and that was great. That was we were so happy for him, and just love that.
A few years,
yeah. It happened to a nicer man.
Yeah, just an amazing day, and some people have said he's even gotten better since he's been in the Hall of Fame. He's a better trainer now than he was before. Is that possible?
Well, I guess it is possible, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Jimmy Barnes. Said,
you know, we continually get good horses, and that's what you have to have. You need that constant flow of horses coming through your barn, the talent. You know, because without the horse, it's very difficult.
Jimmy Barnes on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of this show, you can go to our website, horseracingradio.net, for a podcast. Of course, you can listen online on your smartphone or on your tablet. Jimmy, back in 2012, March of 2012, you received a phone call about Bob and his health condition, having a heart attack in Dubai. That day had to be very, very scary.
Yeah, that was, you know, I was actually in Sunland Park at the time. He decided to go to I went to the other desert. I went to the El Paso. But, yeah, you know, they assured me everything was okay. They caught us plenty of time. So, you know, we were pretty confident that, he was going to pull through. We definitely, our thoughts and prayers went out to him. But believe me, they had the best doctors in the world there, and they really took care of him. And he came back, and he came back a better man. I think he, you know, seems less stressful. You know, he trusted me a lot more now. He doesn't travel as much as he used to travel. And he'll travel to the big dances, you know, the Breeders' Cup, Derby, Preakness, Belmont. But, you know, the rest of me he lets me handle, you know, the Haskells, the Pennsylvania Derbies, the there's been so many racetracks that we've traveled to that we've just overwhelmed them there. Arkansas, you know, just everywhere. We're a really good shipping stable. You know, we can, out in California, you're kind of on an island out there, so you have to do a lot of traveling. It's not, you know, on the East Coast, it's a little different because you're just a van ride away from all these racetracks. But being based in California, you know, we're always shipping. And I know our road percentage has to be through the roof if, you know, we travel very well.
Yeah, many people have said that Bob is a different person now than he was back before the heart attack in 2012. I always enjoyed Bob Baffert, but it sounds like you kind of agree. He's a little bit different now in the way that he looks at things.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, he just takes things a little more easy, and he understands things happen, and, you know, just try not to make any mistakes. I don't want any more stress than we absolutely need. But there are stressful moments, and, you know, you're going to have them in this business. But I just try to keep everything just running smoothly and calmly, and just the main thing is to win. It's all about winning.
Well, and you do it better than anybody, and now you've won the Triple Crown. We spent quite a bit of time talking about that experience and talking about American Pharoah. But, Jimmy, before American Pharoah, there were some unbelievable horses that you had the opportunity to be part of and around with trainer Bob Baffert. Talk to me about some of those horses that you're just, for whatever reason, always going to remember.
Well, I always loved Point Given. He was a really general, even going back to General Challenge, he was just a freak. He just couldn't leave California. I really enjoyed him. Chaluki was special. Silver Bullet Day, Point Given. Even if we had a horse called Officer, which is really extremely fast horse, I think back time to time. Looking at Lucky was probably one of my all-time, you know, I really loved that horse. That horse, he was another one that was just a victim of he the which drew the one hole, and I'm thinking to myself, how bad could this possibly be? Being in one hole, it can't be that bad. Until I was sitting, I didn't have anywhere to watch the race from, and it's pouring rain all day long. It stopped raining, and I'm sitting in the NBC room with Churchill watching it on a monitor, and they showed a head on of the stretch toward the gate, and I said, oh my God, this isn't good, because the one hole, you have to like break and go out and get on the track. It's just ridiculous. It's just such a disadvantage to be down there. And he just had a terrible trip. It was just terrible the whole way. He got bumped and shoved back, and he still ended up running decent. I think he was fifth, something like that. I'm not sure if he was fifth, but he still ran a decent race. And then we make the rider change and went to Martin Garcia, which was a bold move, you know, going to the Preakness, and we ended up winning the Preakness.
Wow.
So he was a very special horse. He was another one that traveled through Arkansas, won the races in Arkansas. The horse called the Factor, he was something else. He was fast, extremely fast. We won the Revel, and we went back for the Arkansas Derby, and five horses entered with blinkers on just to, you know, they weren't going to let us get the lead there that day. And if he didn't have the lead, it was, you know, he didn't want to come from off the pace. But he was a fast horse. Even this year, we have a horse called Opportunity, who I really enjoy working with. He's a nice horse. And there's just so many. I could go on and on reflecting back on the years. But, you know, this year it's all about American Pharoah. And we're going to just keep going with him the rest of this year. And then he'll go off to stand. And like I said, we'll be looking for our next two-year-old or our next Kentucky Derby horse when I get home.
Yeah, the cycle continues. And Jimmy, I can imagine that considering all the big races that you win, and every time you send a horse to the post, you're a major player, whether it's a maiden race or an allowance race or a stakes race, that oftentimes you have that bullseye on your back. And I'm just kind of curious, is it harder to get up to the top with everything you've had to overcome, or is it harder now that you're on top to stay there?
Well, what's hard in this business is to stay on top, you know, to constantly win, because there are ups and downs, and there are months where you might not win a race, or, you know, it doesn't happen very often, but we'll go through a little slow spell, you know, especially when they had the synthetic. The synthetic tracks were very frustrating for me, for our whole stable. We buy dirt horses. We don't really buy turf horses. And the synthetic was difficult to train on. It was easy to train on in the morning, but to run on in the afternoon in the heat would grow and would slow down. The horses would all be grouped together. Like, no one would just run off the screen. So having to deal with those years with synthetic tracks were a little difficult, and we were kind of down. But it all changed, came back around in cycles. And, you know, it's the hardest thing is just to win consistently all the time. You know, you to win at 20%, you're really doing good. So, you know, just go out there every day and just try to win as many races as we can.
You know, it's so interesting to hear you mention going through a slow time, because we'll hear that in baseball, for example, where a hitter will be in a slump. But you don't often think of trainers being in a slump. What's the key to persevering through a slow time?
Just, you know, sometimes your good horses are running on certain days and they might all have ran, and then you just have for the next couple of weeks, you just have horses that just aren't, you know, the solid good runners. So it's just kind of like how it all lines up and how they get prepared for races. It's hard to say we're in a slump, but this is how it goes. It's just cycles.
Yeah, and in baseball, they'll tell a hitter, just keep swinging. Think good things will happen. Just
keep
swinging the bat.
That's the best thing in our barn. You know, I know I'm just, if we were to run five in a day and we don't win a race, we're going to go back out and run five more the next couple of days. So we're going to continue to win. It's just, you know, you can't be lucky all the time. It's hard to win all the time. Very hard to win all the time.
Yeah, a lot of people won't realize that. Just to get a horse to the races, forget about winning the Kentucky Derby or the Triple Crown. To get a horse to the races is a major accomplishment, isn't it?
It's hard in itself, absolutely. Yeah, you need a lot of horses, especially with a two-year-old, you need a lot of young horses, you know, because you're going to go, you know, you go through a lot of them to just find maybe one or two super good ones. Maybe find one, you might not even find one good one. So, but you need a lot of them to go through, that's for sure.
Jimmy, how would you sum up the Bob Baffert training philosophy?
Well, we have kind of a unique way of training. Our horses are taught to run fast at an early age, and it just carries on throughout their career. But he buys a good horse. We have talented horses, so it makes it easy.
What's been the most rewarding part for you and for your wife, Dana, of being around the Baffert operation for the past 16 years?
Well, the Triple Crown, actually, I would have to say. This is by far the best thing that could ever happen to us.
Yeah, I guess that makes it all worth it, all the sacrifices you've had to make and all the things you've had to go through in your career and your wife has had to go through in order to get to where you are today. When you win the Triple Crown, it doesn't matter what you went through, does it?
Absolutely not.
Jimmy Barnes on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. Jimmy, just a couple of minutes left. We'll have to wrap it up, but always like to end
I'm gonna have to go.
Yeah, always like to end by asking trainers what they like to do outside of racing. What other hobbies do you have?
Really, right now I don't have any hobbies. I'm just do a lot of traveling with the horses, and I really don't have any hobbies to support to say.
Trainer Jimmy Barnes, he is of course a Triple Crown winner with Hall of Famer Bob Baffert. Jimmy, very gracious with your time here today. Really do appreciate it. We'll let you go, and all the best moving forward, my friend.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Jimmy Barnes, congratulations again on winning that Triple Crown, and boy, what a fun visit there to hear his story and everything that he's had to overcome getting to the top here, and he's certainly at the top with winning that Triple Crown. And like all of our guests, Jimmy is going to receive a gift courtesy of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Of course, you can visit flairstrips.com to learn more, but all the guests who appear on this Trainer Talk program receive that gift. And don't forget to check out phasictipton.com to get your catalog for the upcoming July sale, which will be the July Kentucky sale. And things really, really heating up now at Phasic Tipton, because we get to the July sale, then we come back in August with the Saratoga sale, which is always the premier yearling sale in the country. And then it's just one after another from there. So check it all out at phasictipton.com. Good stuff from Jimmy Barnes. You don't often think about how much assistance mean to these top trainers. And here's Hall of Famer Bob Baffert, who's won, well in excess of 2,000 races in that Hall of Fame career. But I'm sure he would be the first to tell you that he couldn't have done it without people like Jimmy Barnes and his wife Dana, who have been an integral part of his operation, well, as you just heard, for the better part of a decade and a half. And you heard him talk about Bob being a little bit of a different person now. And I heard that a lot throughout the Triple Crown. And I didn't know Bob Baffert all that well before this Triple Crown one, before this year, really. But I've gotten to know Bob Baffert, and it's been one of the more enjoyable things I've done in thoroughbred racing, because as busy as Bob Baffert is, and let's face it, you win 2,500 races, you're in the Hall of Fame, you're running in all these big races, you're winning the Triple Crown, you're a busy man. But he never once hesitated to respond to a text message or to get back to you with a phone call. It never once throughout this entire process. And you talk about the respect level that you have for somebody like that. My respect level for Bob Baffert, for Jimmy Barnes, and for that entire team is through the roof. And so great to hear Jimmy reflect back on that entire experience and having his family with him, his wife Dana, his two daughters being by his side, Janae and Jordan. It was a special moment. And he said it was probably even more special for him watching them and their reaction to American Pharoah winning the Triple Crown. Pretty special. If you did miss any portion of the show, go back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast at your leisure, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes as well. We're back next week with another brand new edition of Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton. My thanks to Jimmy Barnes for spending some time with us here tonight. For my producer, Lee Delapina, I am Mike Penna, and we will talk to you next week right here on Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton.